哎，呀。Hey, Wayne here. I was thinking maybe we want to bring our laptops today or something. Because I was going to try to have you guys do some stuff if I get my VNC thing working. If I can sign in to get started. What the heck is this? I can't run. How about that? Hey, I got this going on. Oh, I'm so good. Laptop. I thought we might do a few quite a bit of VNC and making some prots today, quite a bit. Not sure how much time we'll have on this, or not, but I was able to get my VNC session to work, and I thought you guys could try to make the process that I made. And maybe the people online can do this too. So thought we did all this work and you guys all set up for VNC and stuff. So, and since I worked a little bit on our CDP data, I got that all in the directory for us to submit. I haven't looked at the other files yet, but I looked at the CDP data.
Yeah, there's a couple of things.
Well, we'll go where I thought maybe we incorporate some in the class too, but see if you guys can make the process that I'd made here. Was Lawrence on? Was I think I don't know if Andy Detwiler has been joined from home. I see the other Andy. The friends on here. So today is September 29th, and I think I got this one working, and I installed a little bit of technology on this computer, and I should update that we're meeting in 4:30 now. That we, since we don't have the instruments in the lab, we can be here. And I've left the lights off, so it's good. You guys okay? Yeah, and stuff. So let's see here. Everybody online, I hope you can hear me, see me. If not, put something in the
I
chat.
can.
Okay, wonderful. I think we'll get started. I don't know if Andy Detweiler is going to join online today, since I don't think he was in the office, right, when you guys went by.
He said he was busy that.
Yeah, so He's going to come in tomorrow for a little other trip. So I let's see. On the webpage, I did upload the, and I'm recording the video here. Right? Okay, yep. Automatic record. So for the people watching the video, it starts recording automatically, so I don't forget to do that. I don't know if that's a better way to do it than the other one. And with this setup too, if you guys say anything, I should try to repeat it so it gets on. And I think it's taking this one here as the audio. And you guys can see this screen. And I need to share my screen here. Let me try to start by sharing the screen and share that. Okay, now you should be seeing my shared screen. And hide the meeting controls. And I updated the recordings, and I guess I don't say where we meet, so just when we meet. So I put the Wicked Water presentation, so what I'm calling a Liquid Water presentation, online, and I fixed up a bunch of stuff. So a new version. And let me start with this. Start from search side. Okay. Now we can see my presentation. I'm taking everybody's good. Current North Dakota Citation Research aircraft. No, this is the old one. Sorry. N75. No. Let's see. Yeah, this is the old one. Sorry. Not the new one. So with the old tail number instead of 555 Delta Sierra. I updated this one a little bit with the probes. So we've been talking. This is the King Hotwire probe here. I better go over here. Now you can see my mouse. Hopefully. So I can point with the mouse such as it is. Isn't there a way to make it? Oops. There was a way to make it back. Yeah. Where's the... Yeah, you can see the mouse a little bit in here. That's white. So that's the King Hotwire, and then we've been talking about the Crowd Droplet Probe. So this is just on the citation with the 2DS and the 2DC, the old 2DC, which was the predecessor of this probe. So I have that. And then I put in here a correct pi now for the pi over 6 D to the third power for the liquid water concentrations. So this is some of that. So everybody, it's the volume of a droplet times the density of the droplet to get the liquid water if you have measurements of the diameter. But this diameter has errors in it because we don't know, and it's cubed. So the errors are really dependent on the diameter. Questions? It's nice. I got a couple people in here. A couple pictures of the King Hotwire probe, but then the other one is of the DMT Hotwire probe, which can fly by itself, but it's also part of CAPS. And we're not flying it as part of impacts now. So update for the people online. I guess we do have permission to fly a second Rice probe. So we'll see if that ever can get on the airplane. But in the I had that updated later on. I'll show you. I changed. I put air density in here. I put just the hot wire equations for the King probe. So hopefully I will have time to do this for the WCM and put them equations in here. Because we are now writing new code to take the WCM power measurements. You know, the dry and wet terms are given here. They have a compensator that they measure also that's not measured on a King probe. So we're trying to write a code to take that and ourselves calculate the liquid water and total water content instead of just having the computer system do it in real time. Because sometimes if you don't give enough parameters to the WCM software, it won't calculate that. So some people have frights of data, which is not impacts, but we have frights of data where you don't have a calculated total liquid water, you just have the power. So this is another reason not to necessarily do everything in real time. It's nice to have code to do that. So other people are doing that for other projects. And in this one, we have M for the liquid water content with the Cal constants. So I want to review these. I got new Cal constants here. And we should do this for our calibration frights. So maybe that'd be another lab, is that we have the calibration frights from last year for the King probe, and we can do and make a plot like this where you have air density times the airspeed or true airspeed. And I give two ones here because the green line is an old fit value with all its terms. And you got C, X, and A. If you go back up here, C is given here as a Cal constant. X is in the exponential here. And you have A to try to fit these three parameters. And then you would fit them in terms of the voltages. It doesn't matter if you talk in terms of voltage or power. The voltage is just 1/10 the power. It's just a factor of 10 that's different between power and voltage. So if you wanted to, you could just say, you know, volts here, you just multiply this by 10. So you get 10 watts for the power. So it's just a conversion between the engineering units and the physical units of power, I guess. And you take a time period, do that, and it's a lot of noise in the data too. So that's another reason that you don't get them zeros just right, because the fit equations aren't right to begin with. Oh, I got a little bit of a offset when I put in my overlays. Let's see, each one of these do that. Okay. Well, what I try to do is I put my overlays on the to make the fonts better on these, and it works on my version of LibreOffice, but here it's a little bit different. Could always do the that's sometimes why they had a lot of trouble with this at the Hale conference last week. Just a note to you guys, they always try these embedded videos, and just about everybody didn't have it working. I wonder if the, yeah, that's why the PDFs are usually better. So if you ever do presentations, let me see if I can do that with my,
the PowerPoint. Are you opening up the LibreOffice in PowerPoint?
No, I'm opening it in LibreOffice, but it's a different version. Probably a different version of LibreOffice, and you would think that that doesn't make, wouldn't it make a difference? It does. So if you go, particularly a lot of people are using Macs, and so if you go from Macs to other ones, so that's why the, and they usually at other conferences have the ability to present PDFs. So if I could save the PDF, now Firefox opens it in. Save link as desktop. So the PDFs are usually almost always better But you can't do embedded links in that. And then I'm not sure what Windows does to, yeah, view. See view. I'm just not 100% sure if I put the PDF on here. View full screen. Yeah, that's one way to do it. Hide my controls. So that's the other thing. Always when you do a presentation at conferences, go if you can and try them. See, now it has my fonts all stuff in right. So calibration constant. This is some old field project data where you had FSSP and the hot wire. And it's correlation is like 0.68. And it's scattered all over the place. So even when you get some good stuff, there's a lot of scatter between these and which one's right. It's kind of the question, you know, you can get a lot of scattering, particularly when we look at 1 second data. So how much do you average that? So in a way, I was going to show you the overall scattering for one field project. This is for FSP data. And we saw these ones last time. So I got new equations here. But then I did, this is a time series. So if you want to really compare them, that's what the ratio is. So this is the same flight, March 10th, 2004. Holy cow, that's like 15 years ago. It's 16. So you can see what the average and standard deviation is. So when you want to see if they compare, you usually put a standard deviation, or sometimes you can use two standard deviations. This one's 2004. The other one was, I think, 2010 or something. There's other ones in here. So but you see here, the King probe is 2.18, FSS 2.03, and then you got these plus or minuses. So, you know, do these instruments agree or not? Look at the uncertainties in that. So if you added the uncertainty to 2.08 plus 0.085, that would be 288. So just adding the one uncertainties will get you up well into where the other ones are. So what we usually say is that these agree within the measurement on the variability, or the, if you want to use that plus or minus standard deviation as an uncertainty. We'll have to talk about uncertainties later. But they agree within the variability of the measurements or the uncertainties of the measurements. So
this isn't necessarily the measurement uncertainty though, right? It's just the variance across the average period.
This is just a variance across the average. So, but sometimes we can use that variance as an uncertainty, because that variance will include both the observational uncertainty of or observational variance, but also the instrument uncertainties too, right? So it's the variance is going to include, it's going to be more than the instrument uncertainty. So these are, this is not the uncertainty of the probe itself, but such a variance would include the instrument uncertainty. Anyway, average.
But that would also depend on your average time, right? You had 4 hertz in that previous example.
Yeah, so these are 4 hertz data, so you get more variance with the higher higher frequency.
Yeah.
So if you want lower variance, you just average more. So that's the other question, is how much do you average the parameters?
Right.
You can average them out, and well, you get, if you average the whole one, you get 0.2 and 0.21 and, or 0.218 and 0.203. So the question is, you know, do they agree or not, you know, because they're off by, I don't know what that is. 0.2 is almost 10% difference.
Yeah, I guess my point was whether or not they agree kind of depends on how you frame the question.
Yep.
If, yeah.
So when you say agreement, you have to mention, you know, how you're defining agreement. And measurement people are a little bit better than this than the monitors are. At least we calculate an average. They put up two plots of color-coded data over the entire Earth and say, well, these are reasonably this model reasonably agrees with the satellite data because we see a low here and high here and so on and so forth. But where's the, you know, the mathematics to say how well they agree? And usually the agreement is so poor that they don't want to do a rigorous analysis of an average or variabilities or something to show how well. It's just nice that they kind of get similar data and similar prices at similar times a year. But even this, it's, you know, you see good agreement like this, it's still off by 10% in the average. So we'll talk about some more rigorous uncertainty analysis hopefully later on. I'm kind of doing this backwards, but look at the standard deviations, one way to get an idea of what that is, but that will change, as you said, with the frequency. Again, average, the ratio 0.96, so don't get a perfect ratio on this from the FSSP to the King probe. So in this case, the FSSP would be lower, right, than the King probe. So is that just because of big droplets or what? This is the other case where we're in and out of cloud. This is more of the first one is more of a stratus type of cloud where it's more homogeneous. This one would be more of a cumulus cloud where you're going in and out of them for periods of time, and you just go up and down. And the ratio of that, and again, when you go through them penetrations and you look at the data, and here the average is a little bit higher. So, and this is the example of the icing data. Get very little King probe icing, but we get something for the CDP. And this is a comparison to the Hotwire probe in 2010. This one seems to have an offset. And I don't think I did a ratio. I was just showing the time series comparisons. Here's one with the crowd dropper probe. So we're getting into more modern where you compare the King and the crowd dropper probe. Again, now the crowd dropper probe is quite a bit lower. If you look at the 2 grams versus the 1.5 or something on here, 1.5 and 2. And then I showed you our comparisons when we have different flights, typically different cargo conditions, and put the green one-to-one line on here, and the July 20th case kind of comes to one-to-one, but the other ones really tail off. So why is that? You got the same probe, same calibrations, and some different conditions. So even if you get them to work in one case, it may not work in all cases. And I don't know what I ever did with this. I think it was just different cases and different droplet distributions where you have big particles that the hot wire probe sees. The other one has more of the particles that are just in the 0 to 50 is what I expect. Okay, so I thought we would start with doing some going back with the CDP stuff in terms of number concentration. So this is a number concentration spectrum where this is kind of similar to what we did when we did the bead tests and put them through there. Now, instead of having channel sizes here where you have 30 channels, you break them up into diameters. And there's this nasty little decrease here, probably between when we have the 1 micron spread and the 2 micron spreads between the channels. But it seems that with the me scattering too, that you also don't get the channels to nicely come out evenly because they're not sizing them quite correctly. And then what I showed here is looked at different dropper concentrations in terms of the low 100 to 150, 150 to 200, and 200 to 250. The other thing, I guess, since we're teaching it, I don't have a good slide or anything on this, but you'll see number concentration spectrums with different y-axis values. Okay, so this one is just given as dN with units of number per cubic centimeter. So this is the simplest one where you just have the number of particles and you divide that number per volume. So you count up all the particles over a volume of space. And that's what you get in each bin. And then you stick it into a bin. So kind of simple. The problem is bin widths can change. So they can be 1 micron, 2 microns. So if one instrument measures 1 micron bins and the other one has 2, you're going to get twice the number of concentration, right? Because you're going to have it over a wider bin, approximately, assuming that that's uniform across the bins. So you got to normalize it. So, Okay, so I have a normalized crowd spectrum here, which is dN/dD. So this is where you take the diameter of a bins, in this case per micron, and you normalize it by that width. So you divide by, for example, 1 micron. So it would give you the same values, but you could divide by 2 microns. So you normalize it. So you say number per cubic centimeter and then per micron. So now you got lengths on here. And you got to be careful. Sometimes people will do it number per cubic centimeter, take the diameter of the bins and combine them. So then you could say the number per centimeter to the fourth. I like to put it per micron because then you have 2 different size units. But then you got to remember the one is for the volume of space. The other one is because you divided by the width of the bin. And I don't So I should do this better. But we can do it with the, when we plot up some data, you also see dn d log d. So in that case, the units would be number per cubic centimeter again, just like they are on the on this one. But instead of saying dn, you do dn per d log d. And so what you do is you take the log of the upper size bin and subtract the log of the lower bin. And that's a little bit fairer, particularly with log normal distributions, because they're not linearly distributed over that bin. So a lot of times you do the log to get a better representation of the distribution. Okay, everybody understand that? Yes. It was never explained to me when I was in grad school, and I couldn't, it took me a long time to figure it out. So, because it's never explained anywhere. It's just like, okay. And then this is one way that we found our Carl Dropper probe, when we first got it, did not have the optical mask in it. So there was a lot of coincidence problems. And we would calculate liquid water concentrations from the King hot wire to Carl Dropper probe. And there'll be a lot of differences, like orders of magnitude differences. So instead of 0.4, you get 0.04. And of course, you go back and you say, well, what's wrong with your new probe here? It measures so much different. And of course, if you're comparing to another one, there's no standard. So the manufacturer's obviously going to say, well, how do we know the other probe is right? You know, how do we know that that's processing? And it's like, well, you know, it doesn't compare with, you know, the other ones compared well with the same process and the same method with the FSSP. So you have to do a lot of work to convince them that there's really something wrong, because there's no way to compare it to a standard, because it's not the size, it's sizing correctly, it's the concentration. So how do we know what concentration of particles we have? If we go through a chemist crowd, there's no way to know that it's 300 number per cubic centimeter or 30. There's no way I can challenge the probes with something like that. Usually the best we can do is like a disc or something, or some type of known standard that we could go back and forth with. And I never did get a disc or something for the Crowd Dropper probe that we could go back and have a repeatable value. So that's why I have that with a mister. Hopefully that gives us a pretty good repeatable value so that we know if it's changed. Very difficult. So I got to prove to them. Eventually we figured out that they needed this mask in there. But there are other people in the world that fooled their probe for years and years and years that didn't have this mask and never knew it. I don't know. I never saw the papers, but so it's hard to know, but what goes on here when you come to new values. So that's the spectrums, and onward to more present data. So maybe I should pause. Any questions up to this point? I got my PowerPoint. And we'll try to get, now we'll have the second rice here on our hot wire boom, because there's not room for another control box for the CDP. And I think our second CDP from Langley is hopefully on its way to be calibrated.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Is this the motivation for a second rice? Is that for redundancy, or is it an uncertainty estimate by comparing the two measurements?
We have one available, and we have a spot available, and it would give us a little bit of indication of, you know, if the flow under the wing is a little bit different. Of course, it's redundancy, but it's probably the least important probe to have redundancy for, my opinion. It was the easiest thing to put in that other spot. Ideally, we would have like a crowd droplet probe or another hot wire probe, maybe. But the rice will give us a measurement of liquid water. If I could ever get our liquid water code to calculate from the frequency, we need to write that code. But it's kind of redundancy, and we have the spot, and it's very easy to put in relative to other stuff. So we'll have to see if they can get the drawings and the wiring to do that. So that will be the other thing, is they got to get the drawings updated, put the wires through the wings. But the problem was so we could do a comparison between the underneath the wing and on the fuselage to see if there's a major difference. Any other questions? Okay. Hopefully I asked Jen and you guys to bring your laptops. I made up a couple plots of the data from the Impacts 2022 data. And since I think everybody has access, we can try to plot up the data. At least with my code in, give you an idea how to plot the data and see if we can reproduce my plots. So all the data that I plotted so far from even in 2004 data should be on there. And hopefully we can repeat it and we can check my captions and my stuff to see that I have repeatable data. So why don't I explain what it is? I don't know exactly how to do this, but why don't we try to do this one first? I explain what it is, and then we can see how we can plot the data, make this a little bit interactive, because I'm pretty sure it worked because I made this plot this morning. So, so what I have in this plot is the crowd droplet total concentration. So this is the concentration from all the channels. So 1 to 30, all summed up and all together in number per cubic centimeter here. So this is a number concentration. And then I have time on this axis. 1 hertz data from the CDP. And then I say for all NASA impact flights with a data limit from 0 to 25 hours. What that means is that the x-axis is only showing you data from UTC or seconds from 0 to 25 hours. So when we take data, we timestamp it in seconds from midnight, which means from the zero point is on that day. Based on universal time, that is the number of seconds, and sometimes I say seconds from midnight SFM dash UTC, sometimes I just say seconds. What was a little bit surprising is that all of our flights are in the second half of the day. Is this right? I don't think we had any. Okay, well, this is CDP data, though.
Oh, then, yeah, possible that.
So we got to see if there was a CDP data. And of course, it starts at like 11 and goes to hour 25. So that means if it wraps around, you go past the 24 hours. So that would be 6 p.m. But there was none that wrapped more than 7 p.m. at night. So you don't remember any flights landing at like 9 or 10?
At night?
Yeah.
Around there.
Yeah. I don't know, I didn't see the data from it, so we can... Yeah, well, we had the second CDP. Anyway, let's see if we can look at this, because maybe I'm missing some data, but we'll see. I got, I'll show you how we did this. So anyway, everybody understand what's being plotted at least. And I'm limited to 0 to 25 hours. There was actually some past the 25 hours. And then when you do these plots, you see how nicely I have this, the y-axis every 100, and then the minor ticks are every 25. They make sense. They're not like 12.25. So please adjust them. My hours are every 5 hours. There's a little prodding area. There's an extra tick in here. I figured that out. So this is 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours. I got to figure out why there's this extra tick in here. So 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 hours all make sense. So don't use the default values. And these are what are dots and not lines. So I'm plotting dots, and you might not see all of them because they're kind of small. But let's see if we can make this plot. I thought we would do this a little bit of an exercise. And I'm cheating because I want to not show you that. Want to get out of that. So we want to make that. And let's see here. I went and VNC'd into the computer. You can do this with X-Men and SSH. So hopefully everybody can follow along, or you can do it as an exercise afterwards. And I guess I'll cheat and I will not, I guess not cheat and lower my plotting windows. I'm in the directory. Oh, maybe I better make this bigger. Can you see that? Probably not too well, huh? Is that big enough? Yes, kind of. Okay. If you can't see something, let me know. I'm in the NAS UND Northeast 2022 aircraft P3 NASA DAC CDP. So these are the final data that will be submitted to the DAC. And I put in here all the combined data files and the concentration ones. So the ones with combined means that we started a data system during a flight. I don't know, maybe I don't need to put that combined in there. I guess we could remove that if we wanted to before we submitted it to the DAC, because maybe they'll be confused.
You're missing a day.
I'm missing a day. What day am I missing? 11th of January. Okay. And,
oh, wait, hold on a second. We might not have
Yeah. So that's, we didn't have a CDP on that day, right?
You don't have a CDP report either. It was only on for like 2 seconds because it fell working off.
Yeah. Well, we still have the data, because that's the one that failed. Well, it's a little bit more than 2 seconds.
It fell on takeoff.
Well, on the ascent, we call it. I think it did get a little bit of that. Anyway, so we still have a data file there. That's the other question. Do we actually not submit that? Or then people will say, well, what happened on the data for this day? And I don't know, maybe somebody would want
they
that.
They can go back and check
on, yeah,
the field catalog.
On the field catalog, yep, to see what it is and all this stuff. So anyway, the data is there. And what I did was I concatenated all the files together. So since I have a script, I think, that does this too, but these are each one of the files. Let me see if I can do this for the summary files, just to show you, which I don't have the summary files. So I make my two windows. So how would you put all the files together so I can plot them all at once? Anybody have an idea? Yeah, I use, that's why I like Linux. There's all kinds of little programs that will do that. Let me
delete the headers from every file.
Yeah, so if I copy all the data files, post processing, start at impacts. Oh, let's see now. I got to remember where I'm at. If I do relative directories, am I in a, and summary files. I'm in the wrong directory. Whatever. I shouldn't have done that, but it doesn't matter. Yeah, remember which directory I'm in. Yeah, I should have remembered that because I had the date up there. And then we need the combined data because that's in a little bit different directory, right? Because that would be not in post-processing, but in combined, right? And stars are wildcards. So there we go. Now I have the 14th, 17th, 19th, 28th. Do we remember all the flights? Two on the...
Yeah, so we have the 6th, the 11th, 14th, 17th, 19th, 28th, and 29th for January.
And then 3rd, 4th, 8th, 13th, 17th.
19th.
Yeah. So I have all the files there. Concatenate, and I need some file name. I always like to have the dates on here, but I'll put impacts. And then we'll call this should I say all impacts? I forget what I put in the other one. And so the redirect here is to redirect all the files. So basically, concatenates, puts all the files together, spits some text files out, and puts them in the impacts one. And as Christian said, we have a problem because now we have multiple header files. So the beginning has the outer header information. And so that's in each file, but they're repeated each time. So if I search for 47101, this is why VI is so cool. Search 47101. So there's the first one, there's the second one, and 47 is the number of lines. So I take 47 and delete that many lines. I did. Did I do it right that time? This is why we need scripts, so that you don't do this. And that's why I have a script someplace that does it.
The next problem is remembering that you actually have a screen.
Well, I do. I just don't know. I have about four of them that do this. Oops. So. Okay, I'm back at the beginning, so I just have one of them. So I'll move that. And I just name it. Let's see, I want to move that. Just so I have it in a different place. And that's the way I made the... And now I remember what my file name is here. So maybe I'll name it the same thing. If I name the impacts 2022.impacts. And the other thing I found was I had problems with CPROC because it looks at the names of the files for when I brought up the spectrums. So I made a symbolic link here to the CDP data. So why not, those that have it, try to plot up. I'm in this analysis directory. And if you do CPROC 22, cons 1 hertz CDP, it's a pretty large file. So I got my file reader here that tells us how long it takes to read it, but it's only the 1 second data, not 25 hertz data. And if you do time, and you can go down and select the total concentration, number of particles, and plot up the data. And it takes a long time to get these, and you spray them on memory because you have a lot of data points. Not sure how many data points are in here, but I could look at it. And so, if you remember, try to make a plot like this one that you can put on here. So that's the default, like that. And do you want to see what it's supposed to look like? I'm trying to find it here. Yeah. It's hard for me to show both of them because as soon as I stop that, because I got to flip back and forth. So that's what it's like. And that is how it is. So let's see if you can play around with CPROC and do this real quick. You could plot this in Python and other programs too, but I want to, we could go over a couple little introduction things in the next 10, 15 minutes, and I'll get a little bit of a drink of water and then come back and answer questions.
Water. I don't know what to do with it. On the axis. But the question is, I 90,000 seconds is 29.
Okay, any questions here or online? If someone's very good, you can use APOT, which are a new part in program two, to do this. Except we can't do the spectrums yet. Is this very slow? Are you doing it on VNC or are you doing it with
VNC?
I'm doing it, and it should just be that the first time you plot it that's slow.
No, I didn't. When I charge
it, why did it not take so long for me? Is it reading the data file slow? Or is it plotting the data file slow?
Like some of them are I posted should adjust that out. Then you go back and we adjust them all right. The data. Just the time.
You don't just adjust the bottom and it should go with it. Edit axis. So you make sure you press enter. And so
you go seconds to the night or hours minutes seconds.
So if you put on the x-axis 90,000, and then the other thing you want to do is turn off the extended and just have the exact values. Maybe we got too many of us working on it at one time. That came back for me. These should adjust after a little bit of a while because, so see my cursor is still in hourglass. So it plots it in the hour, minutes, and seconds, and then go back and it adjust them to get them. It's just taking a longer time. Guess I did it locally. No, I did it with BNC this morning. So now my hourglass went away, and then I got the hour, minutes, and seconds on the top.
Now try and do it so it's increase the interval.
So I did that, and then I need the tick intervals to be what? I never get these tick intervals right to begin with. It's more of a, well, I'll put it up on my other screen here. 1, 2, so it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I believe. What do we have here? We have 5. So if I go to 6, put that in there and replot it. Huh? Yeah. And we can change each one of these and play around with it. I guess we don't want to take a whole lot of time just trying to make it perfect. The idea is to try to make something that you can prod up and see when you make these plots for publications. Huh. So I forget how it does it. It plots it and readjusts it. But it's hard to get both. If you plot the data twice, it's hard to get that second axis to be in a different unit like that when you program it. So there I go. The other little trick is the XY ratio on this is really set for like the 4x3 slides. So, and now you don't have enough space between them. So I slide the slider over. So I change the XY ratio. And I found that it works pretty well if I just extend it all the way over to the 1280 end of the window here.
Is there a way, because I noticed this when I was doing my pieces where that resolution that you have when you stretched it, if you were to read in a different file to plot out something very similar, is there a way to have the exact same XY resolution as the plot that you made before?
Well, make the window the same size. That's why I stretched it all the way over so I could get it that way. There is not a parameter that we set for the size of that window. We would have to put in. Yeah, it is just a set parameter. It's just hard-coded into the code. So what you would have is you would have some, I don't know if you know, like a configuration file. We haven't done a configuration type of stuff for this, but if you want to, you could write a cplot.config, define all these parameters in there, and then if that file exists, read them configurations in and use them instead of the hard-coded values. But I never did that.
Take the bottom right, or is that your cursor position?
Oh, that's a cursor position, so you could go in here and see where it is. But see, the other problem is that when you stretch it, then you get these big borders on each side. So it's really hard to keep these all the same, because then I stretch the plot to fill in the border space. So that I go and get the, and that's controlled by the, and you would have to do this in Python and stuff too if you coded it up and, you know, define the XY ratios and the size of the plot to use and other stuff. So you could play around with all that stuff. But let's get back to some of the science and finish this up. So you could try to make these plots. And I would encourage you to do it. I guess I don't have an assignment, but that'd be a great thing to plot up these data to get familiar with it. And if you can't make it in C plot, let me know. I stretch out the images, set the X and Y ranges. The next one is a little bit different. I changed from doing in the dots to doing the stars so you could see them better. I also went and changed the x-axis to just do 11 to 26 hours because there is a little bit of data here that goes past 25 hours. So do we all tell everybody that we're, you know, limiting our data ranges when we crip a little bit of data out of the plots? And so that's where you can see the big values here. So look at this case. Now you can see it will find, try to figure out which data was that had the 7800 number per cubic centimeter on it. So that's just plotting the data differently. And then the last things I did was I took that data set, because you see this different ranges of the data, usually probably penetrations of different liquid water. But so I want to look at the spectrums during different time periods or different concentrations like I did before. So in CPROT, this filters can be applied to the data. So you can go under, so you can filter the data based on any of the other parameters in the file. Oops, go back. So to make this type of plot, let me grab the, all right, so if I wanted to filter the data, this is still plotting something. Wait till it finishes plotting. You have to go under tools, and there's a filters option. And there's three filters you can apply. And so if you go under filter data, it should give you a window for that. And you can just select those parameters 1, 2, and 3, and you just select which of the parameters you want to filter the data. And so I just applied filters above 100 and below 300 number cubic centimeter. And I think I'm like you guys, slow when we're all using the computer. Maybe we're filling up with too much memory because we're all pulling this all into memory. So got one more point to make here. Oops. I'm going to get the right slideshow open. The other one. So you can just see, if you look at the spectrums, there are a couple of low values in the spectrum here, like at the 9 to 10 channel. And then you got the next one. So how did I plot in? Yeah, 1, 2, 4, 6, 8. Yeah, there's two in here. And so there's actually a couple of low values, at least in the spectrum, but that is, you know, they're normalized spectrums, but they don't change over until 14 to 16 microns. It's one micron spacing up to 14 microns. So that's probably the me scattering wiggles that's not getting quite set right. And they don't have it sizing quite right so that the 8 microns is not exactly 8. And, you know, that 8 to 9 should be a smaller interval or moved over so that it actually sizes 8 to 9 to kind of encompass the me wiggles. But it's not unusual to see these up and down type of spectrums. The other question I have is I plotted 500 to 700, 300 to 500, and 100 to 200, and you see that they all have about the same shape, but the magnitude on the y-axis is different. So why is that? Why is the 500 to 700 so much higher than the 3 to 500? It's thinking. Is it right?
You have a larger spread for them.
Spread in.
Yeah, but it's normalized.
It's normalized by the number per cubic centimeter. I'm filtering the data now.
Is it that the total number when you integrate the BNDD across the grout droplet diameters has to be between 500 and 700 for the black versus 300 to 500 for the green?
Yeah, I think you're on the right track. Yeah, but that's normalized by the size of a bin. But remember here, I'm only looking at the data is 500 to 700. So I have high concentration of values in my spectrum. Right? So I'm auburn, and so this is number per cubic centimeter, and I'm filtering the data to have high number per cubic centimeter values before I normalize it. So you're gonna have higher DNDDs because I have higher DNs. I'm filtering it by DN, right? I'm taking 500 to 700 DNs to make my spectrum. I'm filtering the data by the DNs, and so it should be higher. So just saying that, you know, in the average like this, that the 3 to 500 is the distribution is not different than the 5 to 700. But it's higher because I'm just filtering it. And if you go back and you filter in data, it will just adjust that because you're averaging a spectrum across. So the DNs, you know, I can lower it by just including less higher concentration data. And that also becomes an issue when you average in zeros. So if you average in the zero values, you just lower your concentration. So a lot of times we'll only look at the in-crowd data. But you really want to see the shape of the spectrum. The y-axis magnitude really doesn't matter, right? So it just depends on the concentration. So it's the shape of that spectrum that you really want to look at. I hinted, you go out to 50 here, But you see this goes way, way down, and then about 18, 17, you know, and above 20, it just basically looks like zero, right? So to get around that, we rub the log plots. So when a big concentration like this, I didn't plot from minus one. It's supposed to be 1 to 800. So I didn't average in the zeros on this. But I plotted now on a log scale. So you don't just see on that linear scale all them zeros. So then you can see that, well, maybe you could average this out and make a nice distribution. There's one here too that, why is that one a little bit higher? Maybe that's the coalescence process spectrum and you have two different droplets, or maybe that's is, again, we're getting ice particles that get contaminated in here. Who knows all the different things, but you could go through and filter the data by temperature or something if you wanted. Because it doesn't really, it's hard to interpret because you're mixing ice and water and all the different crowds and everything. But there is data there that you'll see way out on these log scales. And you can do that with CPROT too. And nothing really spectacular about my conclusions. I just put that the CDP and FSCDP, how they agree with the probes. So we should put this together, and maybe on Tuesday we'll plot up some of the data and look at how the CDP and the King and stuff work together. Let's see how many more plots I can make now that we have the data. So any questions? So if you want, try to make my plots. I'll give you a good tutorial on using CPROT to make them. And oh, these ones are actually made in CPROT. So I turn on the boldface and fonts and increase the thickness of the lines and the thickness of the particles. So you can take a lot of time and play with along with some of them defaults to get your plots to look a little bit better. And make sure your X and Y axes are good and you have the right number of values for the minor ticks on the Y axis. Freeze, freeze, freeze. All right, I should be quiet and say, are there any questions? So I don't really see anything that majorly caused me problems, except we should look at some spectrums that are for individual flights. So maybe I'll do that next. So the data is there and we should start looking at it and bear in mind, look at it, and maybe we can have some questions about what this is. So I took enough time. So I'll end the session and we'll meet on Tuesday. Hopefully I have more plots for the hot wire stuff. And I'm ending this. Goodbye. Have a good weekend.